Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're focusing on MS. It's a clinical focus podcast. In part one, we tackled diet, and we talked about some aspects of MS treatment. And now we're beginning to talk about supplements. Clearly, when we talk about MS, we got to talk about essential fatty acids, in particular omega-3 fatty acids, because they are so good for the brain. In many settings, they have an antidepressant effect. They've been demonstrated to have an anti-inflammatory effect, and they seem like precisely what would be helpful for MS, at least on a theoretical basis. And then, of course, the Swank diet emphasized lots of fish and cod liver oil, and those patients had good results. So it's a little disappointing to see that the literature on omega-3 fatty acids and MS falls short of confirming that there is a robust beneficial effect. I still wouldn't discount them, but I'll share with you the latest study published in JAMA, Journal of the American Medical Association, Archives of Neurology. And the headline for the report on this is, omega-3 has no benefit for multiple sclerosis, finds, quote, underpowered randomized control trial. Okay, what is the meaning of an underpowered trial? Well, in order to find out if something works, it has to achieve statistical significance. So if you say, hey, you know, I gave my aunt Charlie, my uncle Charlie and my aunt Rose some spirulina, and they felt great. That would be an example of an underpowered trial because, you know, there's not enough sample size to see if there's a real effect. So you have to look at enough people, there has to be enough of an effect on whatever parameter you're studying. So the study, in this case, looked at 92 patients with MS. They gave them what I consider a sort of relatively small dose of omega-3 fatty acids. They gave them supplements containing 1350 milligrams of EPA and 850 milligrams of DHA. In some settings, that's like two or three capsules, which, you know, should show an effect. But the other thing is relatively short duration of the study. After 6 months, they didn't notice any changes in MRI or in relapses in those patients. So, you know, not enough fish oil, study's too short, you know, there's some limitations. It's an underpowered study. What they say here is that there is not enough evidence to support the role of omega-3s, although there was a statistical trend towards improvement, but it didn't reach statistical significance. So, you know, that's one way of saying it wasn't a great study. We need more studies, bigger, longer studies, using perhaps more aggressive fish oil. I haven't abandoned my recommendation that patients take, you know, 6 or 8 capsules of a really potent, molecularly distilled fish oil daily. That is, if they're suffering from MS. Turmeric is an interesting substance when it comes to neuroprotection. It's has demonstrable effects in slowing progression of Alzheimer's disease. We know that South Asian Indians who consume lots of curry containing turmeric have a lower incidence of dementia and Alzheimer's disease. And so using concentrated curcumin, which is the derivative of turmeric, would seem to make sense for MS. And initial studies have found that curcumin can block progress of MS. At least that's the case in laboratory tests with mice, where they have an experimental model of multiple sclerosis called autoimmune encephalomyelitis, and which erodes the myelin sheath similar to MS. So these mice received injections of curcumin 3 times a week, and they showed few symptoms. The animals that weren't given the curcumin developed severe paralysis within a couple of weeks. So clearly this establishes that there is some principle, active principle in curcumin, which can be utilized there. Feeding the mice with curcumin without injecting them reduced IL-17, IL-6, TGF-beta, IL-21, and all these inflammatory cytokines, which are associated with disease activity in MS. So I'm not sure that there have been or are any human trials underway looking at curcumin, but it certainly makes sense to consider curcumin. Curcumin, some issues with bioavailability, whether it's, you know, the liposomal form is best able to cross the blood-brain barrier. But clearly, some of it's going to get where it needs to go and could be useful against MS. Another nutrient that I really like for brain disorders is alpha-lipoic acid. And we know that alpha-lipoic acid works on the nerves because it's actually used, originated its use in Germany for treatment of neuropathy. The type of neuropathy that you got in MS is actually different than peripheral neuropathy. It's central neuropathy. Let's see what the literature has to say about alpha-lipoic acid. There's a headline here from Neurology Advisor, which is a mainstream publication for neurologists. Headline, antioxidant may offer neuroprotection in multiple sclerosis. Alpha-lipoic acid has sometimes been referred to as the premier antioxidant, and so it may offer protection against free radical damage and inflammation. In this study, a total of 54 patients were assigned to receive either lipoic acid 1,200 milligrams per day. That's not hard to achieve because the one that we use called Alimax CR is 600 milligrams, so 600 milligrams twice daily is a standard dose that I use, versus placebo. What they found was that a significant reduction in brain atrophy was noted, with a trend towards increased walking speed and a decrease in the number of falls. Although larger trials, they say, are warranted to confirm the results of this analysis, the investigators report a neuroprotective effect with lipoic acid, as well as it being safe and well-tolerated. Most of us associate biotin as sort of a minor player, minor B vitamin that you might find in your B complex, but something that might be particularly good for hair and nails. And in fact, the guy who discovered that it's helpful for nails was named Hoffman. Not me, but perhaps a distant relative. Anyway, it turns out that biotin may be very useful in cases of progressive MS, which is exciting because there's not a lot that we have to offer for progressive MS. Most of the drugs that are available are for relapsing or remitting MS, a different subtype. Biotin activates certain enzymes to support the production of myelin. And it turns out that very high doses of biotin can be helpful for MS. To give you an idea, a multi might contain, I don't know, 50 or 100 micrograms, just a little bit of a token amount. If you want to take a concentrated biotin, you might get 5,000 micrograms, which is 5 milligrams. The amount that's needed for MS is 300 milligrams a day. One study found that people with MS who'd taken high doses of biotin reported reduced pain and improved energy levels. A French study showed that biotin helped patients with MS with their vision. In another study, 91% of participants showed clinical improvement. So this is not a minor effect. This is a real deal. This is a drug-like effect, but also with a very high level of biotin, which they're trying to make into a patented drug. Meanwhile, when they're trying to get drug approvals, it is available through compounding pharmacies. I think that should this achieve patent status and approval by the FDA, The company that makes the biotin is going to sell it for very, very expensive price, and they will push it out of the compounding pharmacies. Because what's the point of conducting expensive research and getting an approval from the FDA that costs a lot of money to do, and then just get undercut by competition from compounding pharmacies who can sell it much cheaper? One issue with biotin, though, at such a high dose, is that you can get really wacky results of blood tests. So when you do this, you have to do this under doctor's supervision. And if you go to your doctor and get a standard blood test, it's going to scare the hell out of him or her, because your thyroid's going to be all off, suggesting you might have Graves' disease. It will skew your testosterone, your progesterone, your DHEA, and your vitamin B12, even your PSA. So if you are taking biotin, you should stop taking it 3 days before a blood test. But this is one of the strategies that I've just begun investigating. I think I might even get better results when I give my patients high-dose biotin, which cannot be obtained over the counter. It has to be ordered through a physician, through a compounding pharmacy. One of the more exciting developments over the last few years when I've been treating MS is the introduction of something called nicotinamide riboside, which is a building block for NAD, which is an energy compound within all the cells of the body. And since the brain is a very highly energetic organ, perhaps second only to the heart, it is dependent on energy production. And when energy production falls off, the brain functions less well. And that may result in symptoms of MS, since some of the cells, the neurons in the brain, are challenged, and they may be functioning less than optimally. So supporting their function with energetic compounds like nicotinamide riboside and coenzyme Q10 may be beneficial. More about CoQ10 later. To my knowledge, there have not yet been clinical trials of nicotinamide riboside, but because there have been publications about niacinamide, ordinary vitamin B3, the non-flushing kind of vitamin B3 as opposed to niacin. They have suggested that boosting NAD in the brain may be helpful for conditions like MS, neurodegenerative conditions. And I believe that at the very least, nicotinamide riboside, which is sold under a brand named Niacel by Thorne, we have in our dispensary. It really helps energy. I've been taking it myself. I think it really improves my energy, focus, and concentration. And at the very least, you know, whether it slows the progression of MS, it could make MS patients feel better. And here's a great study on coenzyme Q10, which I've been, you know, intuitively, I've given it to patients at high doses for MS for a long time. And, you know, when patients feel better and they're doing like, you know, 10 or 12 different things and they're on a diet, you know, it's hard to ascertain which component is most important. It's sort of like, you know, which ingredient in the cake mix makes a good cake. But there's an encouraging study here about coenzyme Q10, and it's high dose, entitled Coenzyme Q10 Supplementation Ameliorates Inflammatory Markers in Patients with Multiple Sclerosis. It's a double-blind, placebo-controlled, randomized clinical trial, relatively small, 48 patients with relapsing remitting MS. And the patients were given CoQ10 500 milligrams per day. An alternative might be to give them, you know, 200 or 300 of ubiquinol, because ubiquinol is said to be more bioavailable and more potent. The study lasted for 12 weeks, and what they found was that levels of inflammatory markers decreased significantly in the CoQ10 group. They had lower levels of TNF-alpha, IL-6, they did not ascertain whether these patients walked better, felt better, just reported subjective improvement. But in terms of markers associated with brain inflammation, there was a distinct improvement after 12 weeks. Is it a good idea to give antioxidants, general antioxidants? We talked about alpha-lipoic acid as a specialized antioxidant, but what about mixed tocopherols, mixed carotenoids, vitamin C, zinc, selenium? It probably is, because they did a study on serum levels of antioxidant vitamins and what's called lipid peroxidation in multiple sclerosis. Lipid peroxidation is a marker of free radical damage. And they found that lipid peroxidation was higher in patients with MS compared to controls, and levels of beta-carotene and alpha-tocopherol and ascorbic acid were lower in MS patients, especially during an attack. And they say that it may be because these antioxidants are used up to fight the free radicals that are caused by the inflammation associated with an MS exacerbation. So they say, this is a rather modest conclusion, the role of antioxidant vitamin supplementation in prevention and or treatment of MS remains to be explored. At least they're asking the question. Another of my new favorite supplements in the treatment of MS is sulforaphane. And sulforaphane is made from cabbage family vegetables. It's actually a derivative of the glucosinolate glucoraphanin. It has to be converted in the body. My favorite product these days is something called Oncoplex ES, and Onco suggests that it has anti-cancer effects, which it does, but it goes beyond cancer effects because there's some studies that show that sulforaphane may be helpful for kids with autism. Very dramatic improvement in autistic symptoms in kids given sulforaphane in a small pilot study recently. And so I like to use it in neurodegenerative disorders. It seems to activate what's called the NRF2 pathway, NRF2. And so sulforaphane, according to a recent review, appears to be a promising compound with neuroprotective properties that may play an important role in preventing neurodegeneration. Another nutraceutical that crosses the blood-brain barrier very well is pycnogenol. I've long used it for brain disorders, and I have here a study entitled Protection Against Neuroinflammation and Neurodegeneration by Pycnogenol. And what they say here is, I mean, there are a lot of studies that show that in animal models, pycnogenol, which is an extract of the maritime pine bark, that show that animals given this or injected with this have protection against inflammation and damage of their brain cells, and that this is an effect that may carry over to humans. Again, I'm not sure that there are specific clinical trials looking at pycnogenol for MS, documenting that there are fewer lesions in the brain or fewer exacerbations in patients with MS. But clearly, there's at least a theoretical basis for believing that pycnogenol could be helpful. So I include pycnogenol in my MS protocol. Patients with MS are tired, and so it makes sense to consider using carnitine or acetyl L-carnitine, which is an energy compound. And so, therefore, we might utilize carnitine, although the studies with carnitine are mixed. There are some studies that show that patients with MS fatigue are helped by carnitine. Other studies say not. I believe that acetyl L-carnitine, because it's acetylated, a little more expensive, but it is more likely to cross the blood-brain barrier and get to where it needs to go. There are also some studies on threonine, which is an unusual amino acid, for spasticity. Spasticity is a big problem for MS patients, and it turns out that L-threonine may cross the blood-brain barrier and may be converted to glycine in brain tissue. It's an inhibitory neurotransmitter that has a relaxing effect. And that fits nicely with a product that we use called Protosorb Magnesium. It's magnesium threonate, the idea being it's a magnesium that works better in the brain and may have a calmative effect. And we know magnesium has anti-spasm effects. And if we get magnesium carried into the brain with threonate, which helps to synthesize glycine, we might get an additional benefit for spasticity, which is a problem that plagues MS patients frequently. Let's look at the role of hormones briefly. There are some studies that show that a form of estrogen, which is actually the least toxic form of estrogen when it comes to risk of breast cancer, uterine cancer, it's called estriol. There's some pharmaceutical companies who are looking at the effects of estriol on MS, because it's noted that during pregnancy, when a lot of estriol is made, that there is often a remission of MS. So the thought was, if you give women, you wouldn't give this to men, but suitable for women, since most MS patients are women anyway, estriol might ameliorate the symptoms of MS. 8 milligrams a day, fairly high dose. Again, this is something that needs to be prescribed by a doctor. I've done it a couple of times, and I found it useful. DHEA is something that helps with fatigue, and it also seems to have an anti-inflammatory effect and benefits autoimmunity. I use a lot of DHEA in ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease, and many patients have very low levels of DHEA who have autoimmune conditions, especially MS, and giving them DHEA gives them a little bit of oomph. That's available over the counter, and for a woman, I might give them 5 or 10 or 20. For man, 50, but we need to measure levels and monitor the patient. Here's a bit of a surprise. A study claims that probiotics may ease the severity of multiple sclerosis. Well, why should we be surprised? Because there is a gut-brain connection, and it's thought that autoimmunity may start in the gut, and that regulating the gut and reducing intestinal permeability or leaky gut syndrome may prevent the transit of food allergens and bacterial toxins into the bloodstream, which may travel to the brain and create mischief. So they, Journal of Clinical Nutrition, they took 60 MS patients. They were given probiotics or not, and compared. What they found was that there was reductions in markers of inflammation. And also, there was a reduction in MS severity as measured by a symptom scale. So, wow, that's interesting. There's, you know, speaking of the gut connection, there is a therapy that's used or proposed for ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease, which is to give people harmless, so-called harmless parasites. These are parasites which are pig whipworms. The therapy is called Ovamed therapy. And these are patients who often get better. It's almost like the presence of the parasites normalizes the immune response and prevents an autoimmune attack, redirects the attack of the immune system to the parasites rather than against the self. And I actually have a patient who had simultaneously ulcerative colitis and MS, who had dual nationality. She was German-American. She traveled to Germany, received the Ovamed therapy, and claimed to get results for both conditions. Forgive me for going a little long on this podcast, but there's so much to talk about, and I want to include a nod to several other therapies which are I've recently integrated into my program, which I think are a benefit. Cannabidiol, or CBD, there's a whole lot of literature on the use of marijuana and marijuana derivatives in ameliorating the symptoms of MS, but not just getting you stoned, but possibly also having an effect on the course of the disease, because CBD, cannabidiol, has been documented to have anti-inflammatory effects. There's an extensive endocannabinoid system in the brain that it works on, and you know, it's not just that Montel Williams, who has MS, likes to smoke pot. There really is something to it. It may be really helping him arrest the progression of his disease. And I think that there's tremendous potential for CBD in our MS patients. I would encourage them to explore it, although problem with CBD is standardization and sourcing. And, you know, we want to make sure that they get the good stuff. I think that's a work in progress as the legality of this gets cleared and we more focus on the precise dose that makes sense and the precise formulation, mixture of the various components of marijuana that target the symptoms of MS. Also, low-dose naltrexone. I think it's a remarkable breakthrough in the treatment of autoimmunity. There are, I don't believe, any completed clinical trials. There may be some trials underway. But anecdotally, I will tell you that low-dose naltrexone, which is a low dose of a commonly prescribed medication, naloxone, needs to be specially compounded by a compounding pharmacy. And this low dose seems to perform a gentle reboot on the immune system, changing the way that the immune system overreacts, sort of attenuating the overexuberant response of the immune system via the enkephalin system and via the endorphin system. These tend to have a moderating effect on autoimmunity and help some of our patients. As to bee venom therapy is something I was quite interested in 20-some years ago or more. I attended conferences where MS patients were injecting themselves with, they literally would take bees with a forceps and place them on painful or spastic areas of their body and get bee venom into their system. And this is thought to have an immunoregulatory effect. Anecdotally, there are patients who will tell you that this is marvelous. There are very few and far between doctors who administer this. I no longer administer this. I say you pays your money and you takes your chances. I mean, it has to be done with some modicum of safety testing as to whether one will develop anaphylaxis. That is a potential concern. But it, you know, I've seen it done reasonably and safely, and some patients report success. And I think that the clinical studies on this are very limited. You know, I'm not sure that they either validate or disprove the efficacy of bee venom therapy, which some people believe very strongly. And it's a form of therapy called apitherapy, and it's quite ancient. Well, I think that we've covered all of our many dimensions of therapy for MS. I apologize for the length of this podcast, and I hope you find it valuable. Some of the products that we mention in the podcast, of course, you can find at drhoffman.com. And maybe you'll find them useful for your particular condition. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Thanks for joining us. This is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Mm-hmm.